Well, I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here, grateful to Wayne. Not only is it nepotism, I slid him a few dollars to get me down here, so Brother Wayne's a great guy. Last night it was, several were talking about the job that he's doing, and this morning Brother Kasarjan was talking about the job that he's doing. Wayne's been doing a great job with Focal Point for a number of years. But that's not his only trick, so to speak, not a one-trick pony. He's good at whatever he does, and I would encourage you to, when he writes something, take a look at it. If you are looking at a preaching school, obviously I'm biased. Come to Memphis. We'd love to have you. But go to Southwest. You'll get to sit at the feet of Wayne Jones, as well as, of course, some other great brethren there. Anyway, I thank a lot of Wayne and his family, and I'd be his brother-in-law even if I weren't. Now, I guess that doesn't work the same way as inviting me to speak. Anyway, I'm grateful to be here. Wayne mentioned the class that we taught at Independence. We studied Job for a little while at Independence. About a year and a half into the study, they were sort of getting on to me a bit about how long it was taking. And so I took my notebook and I stuck a sheet of paper in the front of it and held it up every Sunday morning from then on, a few minutes with Job. And I'd take it, set it down, open it up, and teach for a while. I love the book. I think a large part of the reason I love the book is because Dad loved the book. This had to have been my dad's favorite. A lot of you have heard him lecture through the years on Job, and a great number of you as well have sat in his classes at the Memphis School of Preaching. It may even be that there's someone here that sat in some of his classes at what's now Ambridge University and studied Job at his feet. I was going to mention this in a few minutes, but I'll go ahead and mention it. One day, one of the students was walking down the hall, and he noticed Dad's office door cracked a bit. And he glanced in, and there was Curtis Cates sitting at his desk crying. And he didn't know what may have happened. Knocked on the door and said, "Brother Cates, are you okay? Is there anything I can do to help you?" And Dad said, "I was just reading about Job." Well, this book meant a great deal to Dad. And it means a great deal to me, and I hope that it means a great deal to you. This book is one which, not wholly unlike the cross, is a very ugly book, but at the same time a very beautiful book. We only have 2 hours, actually two sets of 38 minutes today, to cover basically 2 years' worth of material. So we're going to try to go as efficiently as we can, speaking first about what Job teaches us about man. First of all, Job teaches us that man can hurt very badly. And this is true even for good men. Even good men can hurt very badly. And we don't necessarily suffer because of sin, though some get the idea that we have deserved what we are getting because we've done something wrong. This book demonstrates that that is simply not the case. But man can hurt very badly. Sometimes we hear Job described as one of the combatants in this battle, which is the book of Job. But Job wasn't one of the combatants. I would encourage you sometime to go through a book that has pictures showing the aftermath of war. Look at a book that has some of the pictures after the Civil War, after World War I, after World War II, after the bombings, the atom bombs in Japan. I would encourage you to look at those scarred battlefields, shrapnel-ridden craters everywhere, smoke lying over the field, and consider that Job is not one of the combatants. He is that battlefield. He is that scarred, worn out, parched, broken, cracked, any other negative idea you can think of associated with a used battlefield. That's Job. The initial blows are seen in chapter 1, 13 through 19, and chapter 2, 7 through 10. We're familiar with those. Those are the ones we would immediately consider when we think about the pain that Job was enduring. But that picture in just those two passages is lacking. And really, when we consider the other passages as well, we still have a lacking image of what Job really was feeling, what he really was facing, how bad his pain must have been. In chapter 2, verses 7 and 8, we saw that he was itching, had itching boils from head to toe. 2:12 says that he had changed appearance. 3:24 says he had difficulty eating. 7:3 and 4 says he had difficulty sleeping. 7:5 says he had maggots and running sores. He had shortness of breath. 9:18. He had difficulty seeing. Job 16:16. He had foul breath. Job 19:17. He had a frightening appearance. Job 19:18. He had weight loss. Job 19:20. He had splintered bones and gnawing pain, Job 30:17. He had blackened skin and burning bones, Job 30:30. And these things he suffered for months, Job 7:3, Job 29:2. He says that he realized his greatest fears, Job 3:25, and that was at the start. Just imagine what those months did to him. He had a medical textbook list of symptoms that were all undesired. Some have tried to classify what disease Job had been given by Satan, how he was stricken. Some have likened his illness to different types of cancer or other ailments. He had a disease we've never seen. Do you think Job, if he is the battlefield and Satan is practicing a scorched earth policy, that Job's only going to have cancer? Job's going to have the worst of every disease because Satan was allowed to do anything to Job but kill him. You think he's going to stop at cancer? Job has this medical textbook list of these things. But then in addition to his physical pain, Job had the suicidal suggestion of his wife, Job 2:9. He had the ridicule and separation of others, Job 19:18 and 19, even children who had previously come to him would flee in disgust. And he had the charges of his friends, Job chapters 4 and 5 and 8 and 11 and 18 and 20 and 22 and 25 and 32 through 37. Man can hurt very badly. It may be that you're hurting. There are brethren in here that are suffering physical problems, diseases, cancers. That's part of man's lot. We're not exempt, as Brother Eric said last night, we're not exempt from pain. We can hurt very badly. A second lesson, actually, let's call this 1B. There's nothing wrong with hurting. You can hurt. You can hurt. You can cry. Some of the healthiest avenues to recovery from any number of problems, physically or even emotionally, are simply through tears. There's nothing wrong with hurting, chapter 3, verses 1 through 7 and 11 and 20 through 26. Number 2, man can mean to do good, but do wrong. In chapter 2, 11 through 13, Job's friends come to him. His friends did not come to him thinking, you know, we're going to go run him into the ground. Let's go and let's kick him while he's down. Let's go and let's see what we can do to add to his misery, to add to his pain. Let's see if we can't just make him even more miserable and even more desirous of death. No, they came wanting to help. Chapter 2, the end of verse 11, they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. That is great. That is extremely well-meaning. I appreciate greatly that thought. Now, I have the idea, and where they're going to see him from afar off, and that's when they really display in a physical way their sadness. Verse 12, I have an idea that the closer they got and the worse that Job began to appear to their eyes, the more they thought, you know what, this isn't natural. He's not just sick. He's done something to deserve this. And it was the appearance, it seems, that caused them really to jump to that theological conclusion. He's suffering because of his sin. But they meant to do good. In fact, chapter 13, 5, Job says, "Oh, that ye would altogether hold your peace. It should be your wisdom." Now, he's exhibiting some sarcasm there. Job had a lot of sarcasm in his speeches. But their wisdom and their help, which is what they initially desired to do, would have been exhibited perfectly well if they had just sat there silently and helped Job. We see others suffering from time to time. And we, meaning to do all that we can to encourage them, actually cut them to the heart. Maybe that they've just lost a loved one. We go up to them and say, "It'll be all right." Well, they may not need to hear at that moment, "It'll be all right." We may go to them and say, "I know exactly how you feel." We don't. There's no way to know exactly how we feel. I don't care if they just lost a firstborn son and you lost a firstborn son 2 weeks earlier. You don't know exactly how those people feel. The best thing that we can do is go and sit, maybe put an arm around, but just be in the presence of those who are suffering. We can mean to do good and yet certainly do wrong, make matters worse. There in 13:4, Job said, "But ye are forgers of lies, ye are all physicians of no value." You came to help, you've not helped. Now 2B, and it's going to be 3B as well. 2B is critics can be wrong. Some people will criticize you, and they will do so thinking they are doing you a favor. And I understand there is certainly a just criticism, a healthy criticism, what we call a constructive criticism. But how many people think that they're giving you constructive criticism, when in reality, they're just pecking away at whatever difficulties you have? I'm going to use old Con as an illustration. He doesn't do it these days, and I apologize for using it as an illustration. But one of these days you can use your children as illustrations. I need to tell you all a story about being used as an illustration, by the way. Anyway, Connor used to say, "No offense, but," and you know, whatever is coming next, it's constructive, and it's going to hurt like crazy. No offense, but. Can we pause that? No, just kidding. We won't pause it. But a few years ago, Dad was known for preaching a sermon on faith. And in that faith, he talked about how real God is. And he asked the question, is God as real as the person sitting next to you? And that's a great question. But he would use an illustration about my brother. And I want you to understand it's my brother. Okay, it's not I. It's my brother. He used the illustration about Andy. That's my brother. And Andy had imaginary playmates. Mr. Bucket, Mr. Pants, and I forget the name of the other one. But anyway, Dad would say, when Andy got hurt, did he go to Mr. Bucket? Did he go to Mr. Pants? He went to his mom. Is God as real as Mr. Bucket and Mr. Pants, or is God as real as mom? Is God the one you go to when you get hurt? Anyway, Andy was a teenager when Dad was still using this illustration. And Andy said, "Dad, you're killing me. Don't use that illustration." He said, "It's embarrassing." He said, okay. All right, I'll use the illustration, but I won't say Andy. I'll say one of my sons." All right. Yeah, it gets better. About that time, Andy graduates and he's out of the house. So I'm the one traveling with him, and it's one of my sons. And surely, if it was the other son, he'd name him. I had no imaginary playmates, at least none of my own. I borrowed his from time to time, but that was about it. Well, man can mean to do good, but do wrong. Critics can be useless. And that's true with these critics that were Job's friends. They meant to do wrong, but they did more harm than good. Third, and that 2B would be the same as 3B, man can hurt others very badly. Chapter 6, verses 14 through 23. Chapter 11, 6. Man can hurt others very badly. A sermon that I've preached before. I'll just give you the main points due to time. But it's from Job 6, 14 through 23. Attitudes that engender pain. Attitudes that engender pain. Verse 14, inhumanity engenders pain. Verses 15 through 21, insincerity engenders pain. And verses 22 and 23, insensitivity engenders pain. Well, these friends were inhumane and insincere and insensitive, and that hurt Job very badly. I know that there are brethren in this room, 3B, who have been hurt by others. And it's because they were inhumane, insincere, insensitive. And you especially get it if you're a preacher. You especially get it if you are striving to do the Lord's work. There will be people standing against you. And the sad part is, sometimes they're your own brethren. We can cause others great pain. I think I also mentioned chapter 11, verse 6. Number 4, man is capable of overcoming pain. Chapter 42, verses 8 and 10. Job overcame that pain in such a way that he was willing to pray for his friends. How bitter would we have been at Bildad, Eliphaz, and Zophar? after they came and they effectively said that we were suffering because we were sinners and our children died because they were no better than we were. That'd be hard to take. For the better part of the previous 41 chapters, his friends were railing upon him. He prays for them in chapter 42. Now I want you to consider something else. We don't have the names of all of his children the second go around in chapter 42, but we have the names of three of them. If you had been through what Job had been through, what would you have named your children? Would you have named your children ugly names? Maybe you would have named a child Conflict. Maybe you would have named a child Storm. Maybe you would have named a child New England Patriots. There's no telling what we might name our children if we had been through what Job went through. But Job chose names like Dove or Turtle Dove, a very warm and affectionate name according to Strong. He had chosen a name like Cinnamon, and he had chosen a name like Horn of Cosmetic, Beautifier. He chose positive names for his girls. What type of man does it take to be able to go through what he went through and come out being able to see the beautiful side of things, the beautiful side of life, not being so scarred that every step and every action was marked by cynicism? You see, man is capable of overcoming pain. Man can be better than that pain. But also, when we consider that man is capable of overcoming pain, we understand that man can be satisfied even after pain. In chapter 42, verse 17, and chapter 13, verses 15 through 19, we see Job's satisfaction. In chapter 13, it is a satisfaction which even in the midst of the pain he could look forward to. In chapter 42, it is a satisfaction which is realized. There in 42, consider how his end is stated. So Job died being old and full of days. He died perfectly satisfied. Do you think that today is the end of the world because somebody spoke to you rudely? Is today the end of the world because maybe a close friend died, family member died? Is today the end of the world because you were fired? Is today the end of the world because you learned that you have cancer? Today doesn't have to be the end of the world. We can overcome pain and still have perfect satisfaction. But we do this overcoming of pain most easily when we face it like Job did, with humble submission. Chapter 1, verses 20 and 22. Chapter 2, verse 10. And chapter 13, verse 15. The fifth lesson that we gain in this book is that man, and they're not in any great order, but maybe some points that you can reorder to make them into something decent. Fifth lesson is that man is capable of doing right. How many think that man is wholly evil, that he can do no good whatsoever? That's not true. Chapter 31 demonstrates that's not true. I love chapter 31. Maybe my favorite chapter in the book, because that's Job's defense of himself. Chapter 31 effectively takes the form, and this is a very loose paraphrase, but it effectively takes the form: if I had done fill in the blank, then I may deserve what I'm getting. And Job could say after everything that he said, if I had done this or that, but I didn't. I didn't do that. In fact, in chapter 29, he tells us the things that he had done. Job was a great person. He was a great person before, during, and after his struggles. Which means that he was not adversely affected by outside circumstances. He was a man of character. But he was a good man. And the greatest thing that indicates that he was capable of doing right is not seen in chapter 31 when he says, I did this, I did this, I did this, otherwise I would deserve what I got. But in chapter 1:1 and chapter 1:8 and in chapter 2:3, where God says Job's a good man. Man is capable of doing good. And every one of us has that capability. We can do good. We can do right. Number 6, Job teaches us that it's okay to have, as long as we're not controlled by what we have, and as long as we are not self-reliant. Chapter 1, verse 3, Job was rich. Chapter 42, verses 10, verse 10, let's stop at verse 10 for right this second. Chapter 42:10. Job is made rich again. In fact, he is seeing all that he had physically be doubled. Well, if it were wrong to have, would God have given Job even more? No. No. It's not money that's the root of all evil. What's the love of money? Job didn't love his money. Not only did God take what Job had and doubled it, you'll notice that he only doubled the physical things. Job wasn't given 20 of the physical goods. Job wasn't given 20 children. The reason he wasn't given 20 children is because those first 10 were still alive. They were enjoying paradise. So he was given 10 more children. But if you go to chapter 42, verses 11 and 12, not only did he receive double from God, but then all of his friends came to him and gave him earrings of gold, as if he needed more. But you know what? He didn't need more. He was worthy of more. And these who had seen him suffer, perhaps some of those who even had ridiculed him in the midst of him, said, I'm going to help Job. I'm going to give him my goods. What a wonderful picture is seen in the humility of the friends. Chapter 31, verses 24 and 25, Job indicates that he did not make gold his god, and he did not think that that gold was gotten by his own devices. Number 7, perfect does not mean sinless. Job admitted that he sinned. Job 7:20, Job 13:26, Job 14:16, Job 9:20. Not only did God admit that Job had sinned, though, in a more beautiful sense, or not only did Job admit that he had sinned, God said, you know what? Job hasn't sinned. There in chapter 2, verse 3, still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him. In God's eyes, even though Job was one who sinned, Job was sinless. Perfect does not mean sinless. We did 8 and 9 as 1b and 2 and 3b. Number 10, which would be your number 8. Man can grow. Man can grow. Dad would call Job a developing character. A developing character. You see Job grow through the book. Growth's hard, though. You hear about growing pains. Job had some growing pains. But if you follow the course through the book of Job's understanding of his ultimate vindication, Job's recognition that indeed there would be one to hear his case and even stand for him, that appreciation in Job's mind was one that was growing. We can grow. We don't just grow when we are developing physically. But we grow throughout our lives. We grow, obviously, in our intellect. But we also grow emotionally as we encounter new feelings. And as we learn how to effectively handle different feelings and different difficulties which arrive, we also grow spiritually. And it's interesting when we go to Luke chapter 2, verses 40 and 52, we see that our Lord grew in those same ways. He grew physically, He grew emotionally, He grew intellectually, He grew socially, He grew spiritually. We can do the same thing, and we must. Well, Job did that through this book, a developing character. And we see that beautifully illustrated in chapter 19 when he says he knows that his Redeemer lives. The next lesson, number 9, we mentioned in passing earlier, we'll go ahead and put it here officially right now, but we don't necessarily suffer due to sin. That doesn't mean that we can't suffer due to sin. We can. We can suffer due to the sin of ourselves. We can suffer due to the sin of others. Probably somewhere last night, probably many times last night, but somewhere last night, somebody was killed by a drunk driver. It wasn't that the person who was killed by the drunk driver was sinning. That person was just an innocent driver or an innocent passenger. Perhaps in that drunk driver's car was an innocent passenger. And that innocent person was ushered into eternity because of the sinfulness of one man. Happens every day. Man can suffer because of his own sin, or he can just suffer. We're human beings. We're made of flesh and blood. We're frail. Over time, our bodies, which are not designed to last forever, are going to wear down. We're going to hurt. We're going to die. We don't necessarily suffer due to sin. The charges of these friends, of course, was that Job was suffering due to his sin. That simply was not the case. Number 10, and this is important for parents, the little even part of this, but man can sin, even our children. Man can sin, even our children. We're all capable of sinning. We all have personal responsibility to strive to do what's right. Remember Job 31 and Job 29. But it's important to recognize that not only can we sin, our children are capable of sinning. Do you know any parents who don't think their children are capable of sinning? Yeah, you probably have some in the congregation where you preach. It's not uncommon. Job knew that his children could sin. So in chapter 1:5, he would offer sacrifices for them just in case. It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. Man can sin, even our children. Now another lesson is seen also there in 1:5. Have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Well, sin begins where? In the heart. Job teaches us that about man. Man's sin begins in his heart. The next lesson is, it is okay to reflect upon the good that you have done. Sometimes we think if we look back and consider what we've done, we might be unjustly filled with pride. There's nothing wrong with reflecting on the good you've done. That's what Job was doing in chapters 29 and 31. Notice Job 16, 17. Job 16, 17. Not for any injustice in mine hands, also my prayer is pure. That's not an undue pride. It's the realization I'm righteous. Every one of us can make that realization. Another lesson is that we can hurt with each other. Man can hurt with his fellow man. We mentioned chapter 2, verses 9 and 11, where Job's wife hurt with Job and Job's friends hurt with Job. What we are quick to condemn Job's wife, and I'm not going to defend her wholly, but I do want us to appreciate that she was in the same situation that he was in, with one exception. Not only had she lost everything that she had, not only had she lost her children, her husband's suffering. If anybody in a physical sense had it worse than Job, it was Job's wife. So I cannot justify what she said, but I understand why she said it. She hurt with Job. But not only did she hurt with Job, those friends hurt with Job. We can hurt with each other. What does sympathy mean? What does compassion mean? Both of those carry the idea of suffering with. When I send a sympathy card, I am suffering with that person to whom I'm sending the sympathy card. When I have compassion on somebody, I'm suffering with. Now, I understand that I'm limited in how much I can have compassion on somebody, how much I can suffer with them. The beautiful thing is that God suffers with us. And perfect compassion, that perfect suffering with, comes from God, comes from Christ. Jesus moved with compassion. When Jesus moved with compassion, the reason that He did was because He was suffering with those who were suffering. We can't put ourselves in their positions the way that Jesus could. And indeed, we don't need to say when others are suffering, "I know how you feel." But we can yet suffer with them. Then the next lesson. And let me throw in what I've already mentioned. Dad's crying when he would read the book of Job. He suffered with Job. The last lesson, life is fleeting, as is our time. 3 seconds. Life is fleeting, chapter 14, verses 1 and 2. I appreciate so much the opportunity to speak about Job. Thank you.